In the aftermath of the oil for food scandal, the United Nations created an anti-corruption task force which uncovered numerous cases of fraud running over $1 billion. But last year, the unit was pretty much shut down. Joining me now to explain why is John Heilprin, an Associated Press writer who's based out of the UN's New York headquarters. I'm very pleased to welcome him to today's Second Underreported segment. Hi.
Thanks very much for having me.
Before we get to the matter of the task force, the United Nations mission headquarters in Haiti was destroyed in Tuesday's earthquake. 16 members of the peacekeeping force have died. Do you know how much progress has been made in finding the 100 or so employees who are still missing?
I think the progress is going pretty slowly. There's a lot of rubble there, and they're counting them as quickly as they can, I believe.
Well, the United States is sending people there to help, but can the UN send people to something like this?
The UN is sending a peacekeeping official to take over and head up the mission and the recovery at this moment.
Well, let's get to the subject at hand. Was the oil for food scandal in Iraq the only reason the United Nations decided to establish the procurement task force in 2006?
Well, it may not have been the only reason, but it was the overwhelmingly biggest reason. And out of that, they decided they really needed to create some kind of new capacity to oversee these kinds of procurement vendor contracts that hadn't been really policed before.
Well, before news of the scandal broke, had many suspected that the United Nations was an organization that was riddled with corruption or fraud?
I wasn't around then. I've been covering the UN for the last 2 years.
Nobody talked to you about that?
Well, I was focused on the last year, what's been happening with the demise of the task force.
Well, how successful was the task force over the course of its existence?
Well, as I reported, that they identified 20 what they call complex fraud schemes that affected over $1 billion in contracts. They had I think my story said they had handled dozens of cases in which there were, I think, 17 UN officials which they found misconduct findings. They led to the banning of 47 UN contractors. So far, there have been at least 4 convictions.
And what was the reaction within the UN to the success of the task force? I mean, that's kind of embarrassing, isn't it, that there were just so many people with their hands out?
Well, the UN is a huge organization. They say that they there's a lot of work that goes on. I think it's virtually all the world's nations, so you can debate probably how much corruption there is. But certainly, each one of these large cases that comes out is an embarrassment to the UN.
Well, did the alleged misconduct take place in certain parts of the world, or was it everywhere?
It was distributed throughout the world. There were cases involving, as I reported, there were several large cases in different countries in Africa. One of the biggest cases that they reported on just at the end of December, was this Afghanistan case. Mm-hmm. That was huge, and that involved mainly U.S. money, but a lot of international funds.
And we'll talk about that in a moment, but I'm curious about $1 billion. How does that compare with the overall size of the UN budget and its associated agencies?
Well, the actual operating budget is about $5 billion a year, but throughout all the other agencies, they spend about $20 billion or so. So it's quite a bit of money.
Let's talk a bit about what happened in Afghanistan. The task force report published December 2008 found that between 2002 and 2006, $1 million a day was floating out of a safe in a UN project office in Kabul. That money was part of the $850 million that had been sent to rebuild Afghanistan and to pay for the elections there?
Right. You had a UN project office based in Kabul, and it was accepting international money, as I said, mostly U.S. money, and the money is supposed to go for elections, road building, this sort of thing. And, the task force really had, there were two different types of things they found, to sort of boil it down. One was, they found would find misconduct findings, things they could identify, and then there were sort of a lack of documentation for the other things. And, you know, if you have some problems that you identify and then you have some money that's not documented, it's suggestive. So in this case, they had $1 million a day flowing out of the safe that they really was poorly documented.
Well, $1 million is a lot of money a day.
It's a lot.
I'm sure that somebody didn't – it's not like you've misplaced a $20 bill.
No.
Do we have any idea where the money was going? Were people just taking it out of the safe?
Well, there was one fellow in particular, an American who was named in the story, who was in head of the office, and he had, I think, the most control of it. But
and he was just taking it out and putting it in his private account?
Well, as I said, it was poorly documented. That was their conclusion.
So has the UN taken any action to date on this case?
Well, that particular case, that was the first of what was planned to be three cases. And that particular case finally was referred out. It was the only case that I know of that was referred out last year to authorities for the U.S. authorities to follow up, and only after it was first reported actually by Colin Lynch of the Washington Post. And then I also followed up the story.
So to this point, nothing really has been done.
Well, the second two phases of that investigation were dropped within the U.N., and the U.S. is now following up on its side.
Well, the U.S. has had its own problems in keeping track of various contractors in Afghanistan and Iraq. Money was flowing out like mad, at least during the Bush years, as we heard. Could some of this be seen as just part of doing business in that part of the world?
Well, perhaps, but I think that, you know, I think the important point is that, as you started out talking about Haiti, you know, the UN comprises virtually all the world's nations. This is a huge vehicle for saving people's lives, helping out, helping food, shelter people in dire need. And I think that, you know, what the story really goes to is trying to make sure that the money is going to where it's supposed to be going.
The task force also discovered an instance where half of the $350,000 in a Jordanian bank intended for a women's radio station in Baghdad was used to pay up personal loans, a mortgage, credit card bills, for cash withdrawals. Has any action been taken against the UN staff member accused of those abuses?
Not that I know of.
So is that because there's a diplomatic immunity problem here? I mean, how can the UN just ignore that sort of thing?
Well, first of all, the diplomats and staff do have certain privileges and immunities, and
they have the privilege to steal.
Well, they have privileges and immunities, and if they're actually going to be prosecuted, nations, you know, have to get the evidence, and if the UN doesn't refer it out, then you know, it's difficult for these nations to see inside the UN.
So the UN doesn't have its own internal auditing processes?
Well, it does have a board of auditors. You know, it has an investigations division. The problem is that this task force that I was reporting about, you know, had specific skills and competencies that were trained to look at into this kind of procurement fraud. And from what I found in my reporting, you know, this experience, this skill set, et cetera, has been draining out of the UN in the last year, and that actually goes counter to what the General Assembly had directed.
Another case involves transportation contracts in Africa involving Russian firms. Could you tell us about that case?
Well, that was another one of the big cases that the task force reported on at the end of the year, and you know, it was just getting going, and it got shut down.
My guest is John Heilprin, who is with the Associated Press. He works out of the UN headquarters here in New York City, whatever that means, because the UN has moved all over the place as they work on fixing up the old building, which is just filled with asbestos and leaks and whatever else, I imagine. We're talking about the UN internal investigation cutback as part of our underreported series. What reasons did the UN give when it decided to shut down the procurement task force last year?
Well, there was a lot of debate over this. you know, it. I didn't really focus on that aspect. I mean, it was a decision that was a couple years in the making. And
well, who makes that decision? Was it the General Assembly?
It was the General Assembly. So, you know,
so there's a political component here. Do you think some countries were embarrassed because were upset that people from them, their country, were involved in this?
Well, there were a couple countries, as I reported in my story, that had protested, I guess you could say, or complained about the task force's findings against, you know, citizens in their country. And so, you know, there was some struggle within the General Assembly between politics and accountability.
And which countries are we talking about?
Well, Russia and Singapore each had there were some cases that the task force had handled that involved their nationals from their country.
So is this whole thing just dropped, or has some other group taken over the task force's responsibilities?
Well, when the General Assembly decided not to pay for the task force after the end of 2008, it did direct that the, quote, skills and competencies of the task force should be taken up by the Office of Internal Oversight Services, their investigative division. And my story was about how basically that wasn't being done. They were supposed to transfer over not just the existing caseloads, but also the human resources, et cetera.
And you write that over the past year, not a single significant fraud or corruption case has been completed compared with an average 150 cases a year investigated by the task force.
No one could point to a single major complex fraud case that has been done in the past year.
In your story, you quote B. Edwards of the Government Accountability Project as saying, it appears there was political pressure brought to bear that may have been instrumental in delaying or stopping task force investigations. So there are other people who are also complaining about this. I would think that this would become a big issue at the UN.
Well, I think it's an important issue because, as I said, you know, the UN handles billions of dollars a year intended to help poor people who are really starving there's tens of thousands of people in Haiti in dire need, if the world can't assure that the money is going to the purposes where it should, then it's not just a problem for those people receiving the money. It's also, you know, donor nations might be less inclined to give money. So I think it's a really important issue.
We asked the UN if they had any comment on your report. Associate spokesman Farhan Haq responded via email, and we had WNYC's Rex Stone read the statement for us. So let's take a listen.
We have spoken with the Office for Internal Oversight Services, which says that the allegations in the AP article on the OIOS shelving investigations and not pursuing cases are totally baseless. These allegations have been categorically refuted in the past, including the allegation that the OIOS has stopped investigating UN vendors. It continues to investigate vendors.
So he says that your report is totally baseless, to use his words. How do you respond to that?
Well, my story is solid. I stand behind it.
Do you have a sense that many of the past and current UN members you spoke with agree with them?
Agree with the UN spokesperson?
Yeah.
Well, first
would
of
be
all...
happy to, are happier with the situation today?
Well, first of all, within the UN, a lot of things go on in the UN that are difficult to track down. Not a lot of people often know about them. You know, what's happening within this investigative unit, it took a lot of reporting to find out what's going on. But, you know, there are documents and people telling me this.
The procurement task force had 20 white-collar crime investigators, was led by Robert Appleton, a former U.S. federal prosecutor. Didn't he have a fairly impressive track record during his tenure as the top investigator at the UN?
He did. He had worked as a counsel on the Oil for Food program. You know, he was a highly decorated and veteran former federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Connecticut. I think he had been a supervisor and whatnot, and you know, he assembled a team that, from what I understand, had quite a bit of experience.
So, was he fired when the task force was discontinued?
Well, the way it works is, all of these staff operate on contracts that are either renewed or not renewed. And in this case, his was not renewed.
The AP also obtained a 2009 memo in which the new investigation division head declared an end to new inquiries into anyone outside the UN, including former staff, contractors, and other employees. That seems like an odd thing for the head of an investigations unit to do.
Well, this was a document that actually closed a case, and in it, you know, it's quoted as saying that employees of a third party are outside his division's mandate, and cases involving the ex-UN staff should be reassessed to determine whether the matter should be closed without further investigation.
But it seems to me that if I was afraid that somebody were going to investigate me, I could just simply quit working for the UN and I'd be protected, according to that.
That's what legal experts told me.
That's kind of crazy, isn't it? You're not a criminal anymore once you're not working for the UN in this case. Hasn't the UN even changed the way investigators conduct interviews?
Right. Some officials told me that in the past year that the investigators were told to use actually sort of basic questionnaires or checklists, and also to type up the results as they go along. And of course, you know, whether you're an investigator or whether you're a reporter, you know, or an interviewer such as yourself, you know that it's important to pay attention, and as somebody's speaking, you might miss something.
Mm-hmm. Rather than just simply read the next question that you've been provided with, which, of course, I just did. Does the UN have any kind of records law that allows individuals to access internal documents or make it a crime to destroy evidence?
Not that I know of, but I'm not certain on that point. I mean, I do know that the goings-ons of the documents of the UN, are provided to member nations as requested.
There's no Freedom of Information Act sort of thing.
No.
What happens when someone is accused of fraud or corruption? How does the UN discipline them, or has it done it in the past, if there's clear evidence that something has gone on?
Well, in this case, some of the cases of the Procurement Task Force actually led to misconduct findings and disbarring of vendors. And, you know, there's a whole process within the UN for that. But it's a long process. It's bureaucratic.
I mentioned earlier that the UN has had to move into temporary headquarters all around Midtown Manhattan. Do you think that's had an impact on the ability to conduct investigations?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, everybody's is in a lot of different places, aren't they? Was it better when it was all in one centrally located building?
Well, it was never really in one centrally located building. The secretariat staff, sure, are at the headquarters, but, you know, we're talking about UN staff all over the world in many, many different agencies.
In the end, what does this come down to, that the individual countries have to go after these people themselves?
Pretty much. And if they don't know about what's going on in the UN, who's going to tell them?
Well, American prosecutors are looking into allegations that the head of the UN project office in Kabul diverted $500,000 to lease luxury cars. Boy, that's expensive luxury cars. Also fly first class on private trips and pay for expensive meals. He installed home appliances. So some cases are still being pursued.
This is the case that I had referred to earlier that the Washington Post first broke. Again, this is another example in which, you know, the report really focused in on about $500,000 that they identified that he had mishandled. But, you know, the other part of the report that had been overlooked was the $1 million a day flowing out of the safe that really wasn't documented. So the $500,000 that he mishandled, that is being pursued by U.S. authorities as far as I know.
Conservative critics of the UN have pointed out that there is little culpability, that the UN doesn't always spend money on things that they think it should be spent on. There have been scandals involving troops, peacekeepers who have committed crimes of their own. Is it possible to fix up the UN, do you think?
I guess that remains to be seen. I certainly hope so. I think that You know, the UN serves many, many functions in the world. It's a unique world forum for debate.
But if let's say somebody in Congress, a critic of the UN, somebody who says, I don't think we should send all the money that we're supposed to send to the UN, called you in for a committee hearing, could you just simply say, well, we should continue to send all of that money, even though I've reported on so much of it just disappearing without anybody being held accountable for that?
Well, you know, my role is to provide information, not advice. So I hope I'm not called to provide that kind of advice.
You spoke to numerous current and former UN officials for this report. Are people within the organization concerned or trying to ring alarm bells themselves?
About this particular issue or story?
About corruption and the misuse of funds and other matters.
Well, you know, as I reported, I see a kind of diminishing focus on this in the past year. That was really what the story was about. And I'm not really sure, you know, who is going to take up this charge.
John Halperin is Associated Press reporter based out of the UN headquarters in New York City. Thank you so much for being on our underreported segment today.
Thanks very much for having me.